It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Kennedy.
I'm Sean Duffy, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, March 26th, 2024. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. An abortion drug case goes before the Supreme Court today, and depending on the ruling, it could have big impacts on the drug approval process.
There are laws and standards that are in place that are the FDA is required to comply with. And this is the first instance that we've even seen where they haven't been complied with.
I'm Dave Anthony. ISIS appears to have reared its ugly head again, this time in that deadly terror attack at a concert in Moscow, though Russia's leader is pointing a finger in a familiar direction.
Big mixture here, with the Russians saying it was Ukraine and vowing revenge, and everyone else, the Western intelligence agencies, the U.S. intelligence agencies, saying this was very clearly ISIS.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
After Roe was overturned by the Supreme Court, a newly formed group called the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine sued the FDA over the abortion drug mifepristone. It is usually taken along with misoprostol to terminate a pregnancy and is considered highly effective. While a lower court judge in Texas ruled the Alliance would likely succeed in its case, as well as their claim that the FDA acted arbitrarily and capriciously when approving mifepristone, as well as when it made changes to how women could use and receive the medication in 2016 and 2021. On a Biden-Harris campaign call ahead of today, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren said,
"The Republicans can try to throw up a bunch of dust and say, oh, we only want this piece or we only want that piece. They think that will help them at the ballot box. But make no mistake, every move the Republicans are making aims toward banning abortion nationwide."
Now, after the initial ruling from the Texas judge, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in favor of the Alliance as well, but only on the rule changes made in 2016 and 2021. In 2016, the FDA changed the rules so nurses could prescribe the drug, not just doctors, and they said it could be used up to 10 weeks of pregnancy rather than just 7. In 2021, during the pandemic, the FDA decided the drug could be sent through the mail. Fox News Supreme Court reporter Bill Mears explains the case the Supreme Court will consider is limited.
The case is more focused on regulatory power of the federal government and who can bring lawsuits to challenge that authority. But the underlying issue really is about abortion rights and a continuation of a national debate that's been going on for decades now about access to the procedure.
So the high court will consider whether those who are suing the FDA can even sue, as well as whether the FDA was within bounds when it changed the rules on the drug in 2016 and 2021.
Alliance Defending Freedom has the privilege of representing thousands of doctors around the nation and 4 different associations as well in this case.
Kristen Wagoner is president of the Alliance Defending Freedom, the group that is representing the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine.
Those doctors all are urging the court to ensure that the original common sense safeguards that the FDA has placed on use of high-risk abortion drugs are reinstated for the safety of women, because they should have the ongoing care of a doctor when taking drugs like this.
Okay, yeah. So the FDA says, and you already know this, but they say 5.6 million women have taken this drug. It was initially approved in the year 2000, and that only 32 women have died in over 2 decades. So they say that statistic, right, this is a safe drug, and that's why they've made it even more easy to access. What do you say to them?
Well, let's be clear. We can throw numbers around, but I think the numbers that are most important are the numbers that the FDA has been using up until this lawsuit, and the numbers that are currently on the FDA's own label that warns women that roughly 1 in 25 women who take the drug will need to go to an emergency room as a result, and that up to 7% of women need surgical intervention as a result of this drug. So the suggestion that it's a safe drug is simply astonishing that they would claim this now. And I would also point out that as recently as 2020, the FDA again confirmed this in what it made its most recent changes. Just before that, it said that these safeguards, in particular the in-person doctor requirement, was minimally burdensome and necessary for the safety of women.
When we talk about the safety and I guess intervention, right? What does that mean for most women? Because on the one end, the FDA is saying, well, only 32 women have died in 22 years. But you guys are saying there's a whole lot that can happen short of death that matters here.
The FDA's own studies that it relies on say that as a result of removing the in-person doctor requirement when a woman takes this drug, that upwards of 13% of all women will need an unplanned medical visit as a result. And that many women, in fact, the FDA has conceded that thousands of women have suffered severe complications as a result. I think it's important for the American public to understand just what happens and how these drugs work. This is the drug that can even be used to induce full-term labor in a woman when she takes it. So the FDA's position is that a woman in her dorm room, in her home, will induce labor and suffer excruciating pain, often severe complications, excessive bleeding, and have no in-person doctor visit to screen out things that would prevent her from taking the drug, such as an ectopic pregnancy, which could result in a life-threatening condition, but also the care afterwards.
Kristen, the lower court judge in Texas who sided with the Alliance in the first form of this case, he had cited two studies that raised possible concerns with the safety of mifepristone, but those studies have since been retracted for, and I know you know this, for flawed data, quote, and conflict of interest on the part of the researchers. Does this, I imagine this will complicate things in the arguments, or will it?
No, not at all. I would first just say on that note, it's quite a day when medicine becomes politicized. The timing of the retraction of these studies is no small coincidence that it's after the studies were relied on. But even more importantly, the studies aren't even necessary because the FDA itself has conceded multiple times on at least five different occasions over the years that in-person doctor visits are necessary to keep women safe. And again, going back to just the basic stats that the FDA agrees that 1 in 25 women are going to need emergency room care simply because they took this drug. The FDA's job is to ensure that medicines aren't approved, that high-risk drugs aren't approved unless they're safety measures that are put in place. And the agency is simply acting as if it's above the law in this case.
Kristen, everything you read about this case says, and members of Congress have said this too, that essentially the result of a ruling that sides with you, that sides with the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, could upend drug policy, and that this opens the door to, you know, overturning decisions on drug approval for any drug. That seems pretty broad and pretty, I guess, wide ranging, right? Like you start thinking about all different kinds of drugs and all the different kinds of allegations we've heard about different drugs over the years. What do you say back to that?
It's just not true. There are laws and standards that are in place that are the FDA is required to comply with. And this is the first instance that we've even seen where they haven't been complied with. And it's the first instance where we've seen essentially emergency room doctors be conscripted into a part of the plan to serve patients. And I think that's very important to recognize, again, that the FDA has admitted here that thousands of women are suffering severe complications. So regardless of what your views are on abortion, women should deserve better from the FDA, and they acted with reckless disregard here. The legal standards will still apply, and they simply failed in this particular instance to abide by the law.
Kristen, you just said regardless of how you feel about abortion. Is that at the heart of this, though, that on top of the safety, I guess underneath the safety concern is a pro-life stance?
The safety concern is first and foremost, as well as the fact that the FDA should be held accountable for putting powerful pharmaceutical industries ahead of women's safety. We deserve better. There are clear legal standards that require the FDA to ensure that drugs are safe before they're approved. And those same standards require that the FDA have adequate tests and sufficient information to demonstrate that women will be safe. And so by removing the fact that a woman would even need to visit in person with a doctor, puts her at great risk. And it not only flouts the law, but again, it puts women in harm's way.
Before I let you go, just tell me, in our conversation, I've heard you focus a lot on this notion of when the FDA changed the rules, the big change was that you didn't have to go see a doctor in person anymore, right? You could just get it through the mail. But tell me a little bit more about the other changes, right? Like, is it a problem to have a nurse prescribe the drug? Is it a problem that this drug may now be used for up to 10 weeks of pregnancy rather than 7?
It is a problem. I think first and foremost, the in-person physician requirement is critical, and that's the last safeguard that they removed in 2021. And that puts women in great jeopardy, because it essentially means that women can't give informed consent. They don't know the excruciating pain, how much bleeding is severe enough to go to a hospital, knowing that up to 7% of women need surgical intervention because of that. And so that is one of the reasons that we focus on that, is that there is no physician care when you're telling a woman to go into labor. But in addition to that, the age of the baby is critically important. And the FDA essentially increased the time in which the drug can be taken from 7 weeks of pregnancy to 10 weeks. How is a woman to know for sure whether she's in that window? And if she's not in that window of 10 weeks, that also causes potentially life-threatening issues that would arise. And I would just say again, like, upwards of 13% of women, according to the FDA's own studies that it used, have said that taking the drug results in unplanned care. And in many cases, this care is severe in terms of the implications of it for the woman's safety.
Yeah, and you've argued, I want our listeners to know, you have personally argued before the Supreme Court. So you know that the justices like to reference Congress a lot. You know, oh, this is in the purview of Congress, or Congress said X, Y, and Z should be done. I imagine we might hear some questions from the justices about that, because it is Congress who gave the FDA the power it has, right? That it's tasked with regulating drug safety. Why isn't this for Congress to decide, what the FDA gets to decide, and why does it belong in a court?
Well, Congress did decide what authority that the FDA has, and the FDA hasn't abided by the authority that it's been given. The law is very clear that the FDA needs to only approve drugs when it determines that those drugs are safe for the public. And there are very specific requirements for it to do so, including relying on adequate testing and sufficient information, including writing down what they're basing it on. And the FDA's own sources explicitly say that the data that it relied on does not prove that the drug is safe. And so I think right then and there, we know that the FDA has violated the law. One other thing that I would point out in terms of the restrictions that the FDA lifted, and I think there's no coincidence about this either, the FDA lifted the obligation that was imposed for 16 years on the use of this drug for physicians to report adverse consequences that are serious in nature to the government. And so they not only are saying that they should be able to lift these standards, but they're not even requiring physicians to report on the severe complications any longer.
Kristen Wagoner, president of the Alliance Defending Freedom, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. For a time, newlywed Amy Ballin felt as though she were living in a fairy tale. But one night, her life turned into a nightmare. After being physically attacked by her husband, Amy ended up behind bars. This week, Amy Ballin joins me to discuss how she fought for her innocence and why she continues to advocate for other survivors today. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
What was supposed to be a concert turned into a massacre. Friday night in Russia, when terrorists stormed into a theater More than 130 people were killed, many more injured. Russian leader Vladimir Putin claims Ukraine was in on that terror plot, though an ISIS group claims it was responsible.
ISIS would love to do what they did in Moscow here in the United States in multiple places if they could.
Republican Senator Marco Rubio tells Fox,
no one can tell me that of the 9 million people that have entered this country illegally, there isn't a really high probability that at least four are members of an organization like this, especially when the FBI director himself confirmed to me in an open hearing of the Intelligence Committee that they are very concerned about a trafficking network that is linked to terrorists like ISIS.
So here's how it all went down in Russia Friday night when 6,500 people were at the Crocus City Hall to see the Russian rock band Picnic.
Four terrorists in military fatigues carrying AK-47s as well as backpacks full of inflammable fuel.
Benjamin Hall is Fox News senior correspondent based in London.
They then spent the next hour and a half going around and indiscriminately shooting at everyone who was there. There are videos online showing the brutality of some of them, of their acts. And then they set fire to the facade as well as to parts inside. It's still unclear how many people died as a result of the shooting and how many people died from suffocation. But they did find, for example, whole bathrooms full of many people who died from suffocation, including mothers holding their children. But in the end, 137 people were killed. Over 200 have been injured. And we do expect the number to rise.
There were four suspects who went to court on Sunday, and they didn't look very good, did they?
No. About 6 hours after the attack, the Russian military arrested and captured these four people. They were driving west of Moscow, and they were pulled out of their car, and there are videos online showing, frankly, some brutal torture. There's one in which a Russian soldier cuts off the ear of one of them and makes him eat his own ear. Oh, there are others where they have electrical cords tied over their body and they're being electrocuted. So this was, I mean, terrible torture of these terrorists. And it's really interesting to see because it's a clear decision by the Russian authorities to show their strong response in return for this.
Yeah.
Now, where they were picked up, what was the Russians say they were driving towards Ukraine. And this is the big point here. Russia is now blaming Ukraine, saying they were armed by Ukraine and Ukraine was getting ready to let them into Ukraine. That, frankly, is very, very hard to believe, considering the trench warfare, the minefields that exist along there. It is more likely that they were heading towards Belarus, which is where their car license plate was as well. But again, big mixture here with the Russians saying it was Ukraine and vowing revenge, and everyone else, the Western intelligence agencies, the U.S. intelligence agencies, saying this was very clearly ISIS.
Yeah. Now, Ukraine's President Zelensky, he said that the hundreds of thousands of Russians who are now killing on Ukrainian land would be enough to stop any terrorists. And if the Russians are ready to silently die in terror attacks and do not ask any questions to their security and intelligence agencies, then Vladimir Putin will try to turn this situation to his personal advantage again, which clearly is what's happening, right?
Which he's done before. You know, in 1999, there were four buildings blown up in Western Moscow. And Vladimir Putin, who was the mayor at the time, used the opportunity to start the Chechen War. Effectively, he got his own power because of the Chechen War and the influence it gave him. Now, explosives found back then in 1999 have since been tied to the FSB. So it's thought that Putin was definitely behind those. However, it's not thought that Putin and the Russians were behind these attacks. They are merely trying to use it in their favor. There's a lot of evidence suggesting that it was ISIS. ISIS themselves have released video taken by the attackers inside the music hall, so very firsthand, and as well as the U.S. intelligence agencies have said this, and they warned just 2.5 weeks ago that there would be a terror attack of this kind inside Russia, and they warned all American citizens to stay away from music halls as well as anywhere else. So a lot of evidence pointing towards ISIS right now, but still the Russian message is that this was Ukraine. And look, we saw a lot of increased rockets and missiles being fired at Ukraine over the weekend, and we worry and wonder about what might happen next.
Yeah, and obviously, if President Putin is going to be under any kind of scrutiny over the terror attack that happens on his watch, he's going to want to shift the focus away, because didn't the U.S. warn Russia a couple weeks ago about a potential attack?
2.5 weeks ago, they warned Americans in Russia not to go to any music concerts or music halls. But Putin must shift the blame, because it is a real negative on himself in Russia if people start saying, you can have this war over there, but you can't protect your own people at home. And so that's what Putin is trying to avoid right now. And there was also really terrible responses from the Russian law enforcement. The main Russian law enforcement around Moscow is 2 miles away from this concert hall that was attacked. And yet it took them about 2 hours to get there. And in the past, the Russian law enforcement have actually used that very music hall to practice in case there were terror attacks there. So it's a big question as to why no one arrived on the scene for a couple of hours, really. So a lot of questions that Putin is trying to shift the focus away from his responsibility and making it Ukraine's responsibility.
Let's go to ISIS. Now, it was 5 years ago, almost to this day, March 2019, when the U.S.-led coalition helped root ISIS fighters out of their so-called Islamic State in Syria, their last stronghold. And Benjamin, you were there reporting on all that. I remember. We even had you on the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, I covered ISIS from their very beginning to their very end. It was sort of the thing that really was the focus of my career. I was there in Bahoz, this town in southwestern Syria, on the hills around it, watching as the very last few ISIS members were picked off. And it felt like a real victory. Look, there are tens of thousands in camps still, and the ISIS ideology still exists around that region. But with American support and with, frankly, President Trump saying, taking the gloves off and saying, go in and get rid of them, the caliphate was totally defeated. But we are starting to see and be worried about new ISIS attacks. Now, certainly, you know, small cells like the ones we saw in Moscow are active. And France said over the weekend that a terror cell from ISIS-K had tried to carry out an attack in France as well. Now, I do want to quickly point out the difference here. I was watching in Syria and Iraq the caliphate. That was ISIS proper, if you will.
Okay.
Islamic State, Iraq, and al-Sham. ISIS-K, which carried out the attack in Moscow, they are the Afghan version of ISIS, and they were formed.
Okay, are they part of the same organization, or are they totally separate? Does the regular ISIS still exist at all?
Yes and no. You know, they have the same ideology, but they have sort of different command structures. I mean, the online, you know, ISIS newspaper that put out the video is the ISIS newspaper that represents all of ISIS. So there are definite connections, but they will be funded in slightly different ways. They will get their funding. And these really are, you know, the U.S. has done a really good job in breaking down the financing. So they can't share and send money as they used to. So there are ideological connections, but not a lot of real sort of formal connections.
All right. This is also what I found interesting. ISIS-K has a common enemy with the U.S. and Afghanistan. They don't like the Taliban. Yeah. And also, ISIS-K doesn't like Russia. This is very interesting to me.
Well, yes. I mean, first of all, ISIS-K were the ones behind the bombing at the Afghan Khalid airport that killed 13 Americans.
The Abbey Gate bombing, right.
They were the ones behind there. But in the lead up to U.S. withdrawal, America was giving intel to the Taliban to bomb and destroy ISIS-K targets. So you actually had the U.S. and the Taliban sharing information to target ISIS-K. And yes, they can't stand, for example, Iran, and they launched the big attack on the Shia shrine in Iran, was it last year, killed hundreds. And they can't stand Russia either because of Russia's support for the Syrian government and it's allied with Iran. So that's what ISIS-K is focused on, as opposed to proper ISIS, which really wants to form a caliphate rather than target these sort of countries.
One of the concerns with ISIS-K is that withdrawal. The U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan in 2021, there were a lot of members of Congress who were worried that because we weren't there anymore, we didn't have a lot of intelligence on the ground anymore in Afghanistan to track ISIS-K. Is that still the issue?
Yeah, and look, there was always those voices who said we should keep 2,500 roughly soldiers in Afghanistan, keep the air base, the Bagram air base. You know, 2,500 American soldiers is how many are in Iraq and Syria at the moment. And it's just a number that allows them to operate, to allow them to collect intelligence. Well, that doesn't exist in Afghanistan. There is no intelligence there. And the Taliban do not have total control over all the country. There are these pockets, particularly up along the Pakistani border, where groups like ISIS-K can retain some strength. And so, yes, having pulled out of Afghanistan totally, America has left a country where new terror groups like this can thrive, can grow strong if they can hold the Taliban back.
All right. I always do this when you're on with us. You're searching for heroes podcast. Who's next
It's very interesting this week of what we've been talking about. The podcast episode that just came out is with Jim Foley's mother, Diane Foley. Jim Foley was the American journalist who was taken by ISIS in Syria and beheaded in the orange jumpsuit by ISIS.
Awful.
And it really led to a huge change. And so we've been talking a lot about ISIS, and I spoke to his mother, who has gone through a huge amount. She actually sat down with one of the four people who killed her son, an English terrorist, who has now been moved to America.
Those the ISIS Beatles? Is that who they were? They were called the Beatles?
Exactly. Yeah.
And she sat down with the killer?
In an American courtroom. He's been sentenced to life, and she wanted to sit down. Her book is amazing. It's her looking him in the eyes and then talking. And she's got this remarkable story of resilience where she doesn't hate. She's trying to get through this. And so it's fascinating to listen to her. And what was also fascinating is that Jim Foley, while he was being held by ISIS, was known to be the most resilient person there. And he was keeping everyone, all the other hostages up. He was motivating them. He was the resilient one amongst them. So fascinating to talk about him. He was a resilient person. His mother is a resilient person. And so great having them on the podcast, or rather having the mother on the podcast and talking about Jim.
Yes. The podcast is Searching for Heroes, and you can get that on the Fox News Podcast Network, along with the rundown, of course. Benjamin Hall, Fox News senior correspondent in London on this whole ISIS and Russia. Very interesting. Thanks so much.
Always my pleasure, Dave. Thank you.
I'm Gianna Gelosi with your Fox True Crime Minute. An Oregon cold case from 1980 solved thanks to some discarded chewing gum. 60-year-old Robert Plimpton was found guilty on one count of first-degree murder and four counts of second-degree murder in the killing of Mount Hood Community College student Barbara Tucker. According to a release from the county DA, the then 19-year-old was kidnapped, sexually assaulted, and beaten to death on January 15, 1980. Witnesses that night say they heard screaming and saw a bloody woman waving her arms. Tucker's body was found the following morning near a parking lot used by students. Swabs were taken during Tucker's autopsy, but the case went cold until March of 2021, when genealogists linked the DNA profile to Plimpton. Investigators started surveilling Plimpton and collected a wad of used gum. DNA pulled from the wad matched the autopsy swabs, and Plimpton was arrested in June of that year. Plimpton's attorneys say they plan to appeal his conviction. His sentencing is scheduled for June. There's more on this story at foxnews.com. Subscribe to the Fox True Crime Podcast with Emily Campagno. I'm Gianna Gelosi with your Fox True Crime Minute.
This week on Perino on Politics, are today's presidential candidates bad or good for American business? The host of Making Money on Fox Business, Charles Payne, joins me with a look at how President Biden is impacting business. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Subscribe to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tommy Lahren.
What's on your mind?
It's abundantly obvious the swamp creatures have one primary goal, to get Trump. They are so worried he will be reelected, they've pulled out all the stops, all the standards, and all the moral decency to sabotage his efforts for reelection. Not only have they weaponized the legal system against him to drain his time and energy, they're also hoping to drain his bank account. The latest FEC filing from February shows Trump's Save America PAC doled out $5.6 million to lawyers last month alone. That's $230,000 per day, and the PAC only raised $5 million in the same time frame. This cash bleed is only just the beginning. Trump is a rich man, but even his wealth has limits. The swamp's motivation, clear: bankrupt, defame, slander, and sabotage Trump by any means necessary. How scared they are of Trump should terrify all of us. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to FoxNews.com.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.